ॐ श्रीलक्ष्मीनन्दस्य जनार्जनाशलकया चक्षुसुमिलितञ्जेन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोविष्टां स्थपितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मायां ददति सा पदन्तिकम्. वंशकोपतिभ्यश्च गिभिसिन्धुवै च पतितनं भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. Chapter 11. Narada Muni describes to Yudhisthira that which, or a society, how to organize a society based on varnas and ashramas, so that society's purpose, actual purpose, civilization's actual purpose of God realization, a spiritual purpose, an eternal purpose, can be realized. Because after all, a society is organized around a goal. Everything is organized around a goal. So whether the goal is economic development or sensual pleasures or spiritual advancement, still there has to be an organization of society. So the Vedic society, the Vanashrama society, was organized clearly around spiritual advancement, around as the seventh verse says, Daman Mulam, He Bhagawan, around establishing everyone's relationship with Bhagawan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So after describing that basic principle, Narada Muni describes to Yudhisthira Maharaj the basic sub-religious principles that everyone should follow, regardless of their position in society, character, integrity principles that will help one advance. And then he begins to describe Brahmins, Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Sudras, the basic varna part of the society. It means the Brahminical or priestly caste, so-called caste, which doesn't participate in society in every way, but gives spiritual guidance. Its duties are delineated so that they can give spiritual guidance. And everyone is submissive to the Brahminical caste because they are like the head of society. They give the direction to society, and they're supposed to be, the Brahmin's supposed to be in the mode of goodness. Those two verses emphasize that it is not by one's birth that one is placed as a Brahmin, but one's qualities, especially the Yasyalal, the final verse in the 11th chapter, emphasize this. And in an emergency, it describes that anyone, regardless of his birth, can take to the position of a Brahmin. And Prabhupada described how these were emergency times, as the society in general has lost its head, lost its goal, its direction. It has become, instead of being ruled or governed or led by goodness, it's being led by passion and ignorance, and therefore that causes so much trouble. So the Kshatriyas or the warriors or administrators, they have a particular spirit too, just as the Brahmanas have their spirit. So the Bhagavatam describes their duties. So anyone in one sense can take any position in society that one wants, but one has to adapt and have the qualities of that position. So the Kshatriyas are the warriors, the administrators, courageous in battle, Ishvaravabhavamscha. Bhagavad Gita 18th chapter also describes these qualities. And the Vaishyas, the mercantile people, the tradespeople who are like the belly that feed everyone, their position is described. And then the Sudras, or the workers, or the assistants, are described. In addition, the 11th chapter also describes the position of women and how they should act and adapt to the mood of their husbands. And also the position of those who are mixed castes, who are not quite at any of the varnas that were mentioned, of Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, that they should perform their traditional duties and gradually become purified by performing those. So now, after describing the Varnic side, now the ashrams are going to begin being described. And in chapter 12, especially the brahmachari and vanaprastha ashram will be given. And then in the next chapter, the renunciant will be described. It's 13. And then 14, grihastha ashram. So more emphasis is given on the ashram side in these chapters. These three chapters will describe the four ashrams. So now, brahmachari. Now, Narada Uvacha. Brahmachari gurukule vashandanto garohitam acharanda savannicho guru so sudrita saulida. So brahmachari means student. And a student means one who is learning. So what does brahmachari learn? A brahmachari learn, this verse describes. A student should practice completely controlling his senses. First principle. To not indulge the senses. This is the purpose of brahmachari life. It is meant for studying, studentship, and learning control of the senses. And if one can control one's senses in one's youth, then one can control one's mind when one is older. And if one can control one's mind, then he has all hope for making his life successful. So a student, brahmachari gurukula, he should live in the gurukula, the residence of the guru, the place, the family place of the guru. Vashandanto gurohita. He should practice continually. Vashandanto. He should control his senses. Gurohitam. And not live selfishly, but live for the benefit of the guru, not for one's personal benefit. He should be submissive and should have an attitude of firm friendship for the spiritual master. That's sudrita sodrita. Gurau sudrita saurida. Firm friendship. With a great vow, the brahmachari should live at the gurukula only for the benefit of the guru. So one in this way, regardless of what one is going to do in the remainder of one's life, one learns how to be selfless and self-controlled, not selfish and uncontrolled, not instant gratification being the purpose of education or later economic development, but rather character, sense control, mind control. So this is real education. Because if someone is educated, highly educated in technology or some other means, economics or science or whatever, or philosophy even, but has no ability to control his mind or senses, then one can't even trust that person. So if one is untrustworthy, can one say that person is truly educated if he's not trustworthy? So the education is obviously faulty. So this leads one to understand the basis of all education. And that is character, sense control, mind control, and character. Learning how to be submissive. Because the principle in being submissive to the guru is that in that way the mind and the senses are controlled, and one has to learn the art of surrendering to a higher authority. And later on, what occurs when one becomes entrained, studies shastra, learns the proper achar or spirit or activities, the proper way to act. One learns these. One assimilates the instructions of guru and shastra and sadhus, holy persons. And then, where does one keep these instructions? One keeps these instructions in his intelligence. So as previously, when one is in the gurukula and very young, or being trained, one learns to be submissive to the authority of the person, the spiritual master, and the Shastra. Then later on, when one may not always be in the presence of one's spiritual master, one's intelligence will carry those instructions, and one learns for the mind to be submissive to the intelligence who has been trained up in Krishna consciousness, and therefore he's carrying. And that's what Prabhupada said. He said that vani is more important than vapu. The instructions are more important than the personal association, because the instructions can always be there with the person, assimilated in the intelligence. Well, the personal, physical presence of the spiritual master may or may not be present. So to be fixed in the vani, to have one's intelligence trained and fixed, is what one should really learn during one's studentship, and to be submissive to those instructions. In other words, the mind doesn't just do the opposite or rebel. Submission to the trained, to the training, spiritual training. And therefore one's whole life can be spiritually successful. Very easily, not the constant struggle that we have to go through if we haven't been trained in this way. So this is the basic principle. One should not live as if one is the center of the universe. This is what the youth today becomes trained as. I am the center of the universe, and I demand immediate gratification, immediate response with my computer games and my this and my that and the television. My senses always have to, so unpeaceful, disturbed senses. The more one has to stimulate the senses, the more dissatisfied, and the more the senses will be stimulated, and the more the mind will be upset. So different from the Vedic culture, even Western traditional culture. So if the children are very disturbed, what future is there for the society? If they have vanasankaras, was explained in the last chapter and also in the Bhagavad Gita. What future is there for the society? It's a disturbed society by definition. So with love and affection, sodrita, friendship, goodwill towards the Guru, and firmly fixed, sudrita, firmly fixed in these moods and vows. Text 2. At both junctions of day and night, this is also what the Brahmachari learns, namely in the early morning and in the evening, he should be fully absorbed in thoughts of the spiritual master, fire, the sun god, and Lord Vishnu, and by chanting the Gayatri Mantra, he should worship them. So, Sandhya. Being called by the spiritual master, the student should study the Vedic mantras regularly. Every day before beginning his studies and at the end of his studies, the disciple should respectfully offer obeisances unto the spiritual master. He's getting knowledge, spiritual knowledge, eternal knowledge that will benefit him forever. So therefore he is respectful towards that teacher, guru. Four. Carrying pure kusha grass in his hand, auspicious kusha grass, the brahmachari should dress regularly with a belt of straw and with deerskin garments. Graham, how would you like that? Deerskin garments and a belt of straw. It seems like it might. Maybe it would suit Alan better. He should wear matted hair. Now we're getting right down to it there. Matted hair, carry a rod and a water pot, and be decorated with a sacred thread as recommended in the Shastra. So this is a particular type of Gurukula. Actually, when Prabhupada was establishing the Gurukula, there was when this canto came out in Vrindavan, they asked Prabhupada if the children should carry rods with them, sticks like that, danda. And Prabhupada said, okay, Shastra said. So they began doing that, and then they started hitting each other with the sticks naturally. So, okay, finished. So it took a particular type of peaceful mentality also. The brahmachari should go out morning and evening to collect alms, and he should offer all that he collects to the spiritual master selflessly. In that way, by going out and dealing with the world, of course the world was the village and everyone was respectful, and everyone would give something. And in this way, through this type of simple charity, the Gurukula was supported. It didn't need great grants from the government and therefore have to teach the government curriculum. Very, very, very simple, austere, because people were satisfied. Life becomes complicated due to our inherent dissatisfaction. And we think, which means the mode of passion, we think attaining something on the material level will satisfy us. So therefore, we strive for this and strive for that and attain only more desires, which cause more dissatisfaction, because the less percent of those desires we can fulfill, the more we have, the more we desire, the less happy we're going to be. So they would collect alms, beg, and he offers all he collects to the spiritual master. So in this way he learns to be detached, the brahmachari learns detachment, because when one is begging, sometimes one is insulted, sometimes someone says, oh, so nice, here, take this, and you become detached, and people are neutral, don't even care that you exist. So then one has a chance to learn to apply all the principles that he learns shastrically. And then the teacher can say, well, how did it go today? The guru says that. And he said, well, this happened and that happened. And how did you react to this happening and that happened? Well, this got a bit angry over here. Well, how could you improve? Try this. Did you take shelter of Krishna? And this way the instruction can get very practical and personal application and response as to how the instructions are being assimilated. But again, all that he collects is being offered to the spiritual master. Doesn't keep anything for himself. So these are the basic principles of brahmacharya. Sense control, mind control, acting as a servant, collecting, keeping nothing, not even a paisa, not even a penny. Giving all for the service of the guru. And the guru doesn't take it in joy and have 50 Rolls Royces like that, but rather he's using everything in the service of Krishna. He should eat only, the brahmachari should eat only if ordered to take food by the spiritual master. Otherwise, if the spiritual master does not give this order, he may sometimes have to fast. Of course, the spiritual master doesn't forget, and he gives the order. But yet, so self-satisfied, dependent on the spiritual master, So sense-controlled, that these things are not austerities, because of the sudritaha, the great affectionate closeness for the spiritual master. So it's not a matter of great, great austerity in a sense, due to the great affection. It was just very, very, very natural and wonderful, not a torturous austerity. But yet, if the spiritual master doesn't say eat, he fasts that day. A brahmachari should be quite well behaved and gentle, and should not eat or collect more than necessary. He must always be active and expert, fully believing in the instructions of the spiritual master and the shastras, fully controlling his senses. He should associate only as much as necessary with women or those controlled by women. I'll put short purport. A brahmachari should be very careful not to mix with women or with men addicted to women. Although when he goes out to beg alms, it is necessary to talk with women and with men very much attached to women. This association should be very short, and he should talk with them only about begging alms and nothing and not more. A brahmachari should be very careful in associating with men who are attached to women. Why? Because there's such a natural attraction between men and women that will be explained. So therefore, how will one control one's mind and senses if one's words or thoughts begin to go in that direction? And associating with men who are attached to women is considered more dangerous, as the Bhagavatam explains. Why? Because when there's dealings between men and women, there at least there's some shyness. And you don't talk about any old thing. But amongst men, They'll talk about everything, anything so openly. So that's even considered worse than associating with men attached to women because of the openness of the discussions on things that shouldn't be thought about or talked about. It's considered even worse, more dangerous. A brahmachari, or one who has not accepted the grihastha ashram, family life, must rigidly avoid talking with women or about women, for the senses are so powerful that they may agitate even the mind of a sannyasi, a member of the renounced order of life. So these things should be done very carefully. Otherwise, one is playing with fire, asking for trouble, flirting with danger. Purport. Brahmacharya essentially means the vow not to marry, but to observe strict celibacy. Brihad vrata. Brihad means big. Big vrata, big vow, the great vow. Great because it's so difficult. It's an austerity to take this vow of brahmacharya. Strict celibacy, no marriage, no sex life throughout one's life. A brahmacharya sannyasi should avoid talking with women or reading literature concerning talks between man and women. Man and woman. The injunction restricting association with women is the basic principle of spiritual life. Associating or talking with women is never advised in any of the Vedic literatures. The entire Vedic system teaches one to avoid sex life so that one may gradually progress from brahmacharya to grihastha, from grihastha to vanaprastha, from vanaprastha to sannyas, and thus give up material enjoyment, which is the original cause of bondage to this material world. The word brihadvrata refers to one who has decided not to marry, or in other words, not to indulge in sex life throughout his entire life. So this principle that Prabhupada speaks very openly of the non-association between men and women, is so contrary to contemporary society. But Prabhupada explains also very clearly why this is the basic training of brahmacharya and of the basic principle of spiritual life, to give up sex life. Why? It's because when one engages in sex life, one is in the position of enjoyer. This is for my pleasure, and the pleasure is the pleasure of the material world. So what it does is fix one in false ego, false identity. I am the enjoyer, which is exactly opposite, counter to the basic principle of spiritual life, which is Gopi Bharta Pada Kamalaya Dasa Dasa Nadas. I'm not the enjoyer, but I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of Gopi Bharta, the master of the gopis, Krishna Gopinath. So the two are in opposition to each other. And therefore, because this is the basic principle of spiritual life, one who has decided to be celibate, not indulge in sex life through his life, he has taken Brihad Vrata, the great vow. And this great vow will help him incredibly to get out of the material world, because it means that one can actually cultivate the mood of service as opposed to mastership. 8. If the wife of the spiritual master is young, a young brahmachari should not allow her to care for his hair, massage his body with oil, or bathe him with affection like a mother. Prabhupada's purport. The relationship between the student or disciple and the wife of the spiritual master or teacher is like that between son and mother. A mother sometimes cares for her son by combing his hair, massaging his body with oil, or bathing him. Similarly, the wife of the teacher is also a mother, Guru Patni, and therefore she may also care for the disciple in a motherly way. If the wife of the teacher is a young woman, however, a young brahmachari should not allow such a mother to touch him. This is strictly prohibited. There are 7 kinds of mothers. Atma mata guru patni brahmani rajapatnika dheno datri tata prithvi saptaita matara smita. These mothers are the original mother, the wife of the teacher or spiritual master, the wife of a brahmana. the king's wife, the cow, the nurse, and the earth. Unnecessary association with women, even with one's mother, sister, or daughter, is strictly prohibited. This is human civilization. So very strict. But for a purpose, not just fanaticism, for a very specific philosophical, spiritual, practical purpose. A civilization that allows men to mix unrestrictedly with women is an animal civilization. In Kali Yuga, people are extremely liberal, but mixing with women and talking with them as equals actually constitutes an uncivilized way of life. It's interesting to note that one time I was sitting with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said that because I allowed women to move in the temples, because of that I was successful. He said that. So on one hand, there shouldn't be association between men and women. On the other hand, Prabhupada allowed women to move into the temple, something that generally wasn't done at all. So Prabhupada's secretary servant at that time asked Prabhupada, and he adjusted that principle, that generally women don't live in the temples. So Prabhupada's servant asked Prabhupada, well, what's the difference between making an adjustment and changing a principle? Because someone can say, for preaching and for success, we have to change all this. Because nowadays, we can't... There has to be association between men and women. There has to be sex life. There has to be this. There has to be that. The matted hair, that's a good principle. We can keep that. But all the rest, we have to change. Deer skins, okay. We don't do that, so why do we have to do this? So Prabhupada's reply to that question of what's the difference between making an adjustment, a practical adjustment, and changing the principle was, that takes some intelligence to understand. Takes some intelligence. So a greatly intelligent person understands the principles, deeply understands their purpose. And he doesn't whimsically adjust them or throw them out. He understands that every adjustment will cause a problem, but yet sometimes, nevertheless, adjustments have to be made. So he does it after great thoughtfulness and with intelligence. So it doesn't mean that we can never make any adjustments, but we should be very careful of making whimsical adjustments or making adjustments whimsically. It will cause great havoc in spiritual life. And in the name of spiritual life, it will just be material life. So when we feel the need to make an adjustment, we should always consult and not be proud and think that our intelligence is fully developed. We should always confirm. Even Lord Chaitanya said this to Sanatana Goswami. When Sanatana Goswami inquired from him about spiritual life, Lord Chaitanya said that you know the answers to these questions. Kami, who are you? Why am I suffering? You know the answers to these questions, but it's the very nature of a sadhu to inquire, to confirm. So we should always inquire to confirm, and we should inquire from people who we trust and know have deeper realizations than we do. Even if we're right, we should inquire to confirm. Otherwise, we can wreak havoc with our spiritual life and the spiritual lives of others. So what is civilization? What is uncivilized life? Prabhupada is putting it down to this one principle. Soon as there's unrestricted sex life, animal life. Civilization, human civilization, means restricting. Now an important verse. Woman is compared to fire. So this is, again, this is being explained within the frame of reference of what is brahmachari life. And here, a main principle of celibacy and not associating with women for a brahmachari, so that one's senses and mind can be controlled, so that one can focus one's mind on Krishna, especially when one is young. Because when one's young, one's mind is soft like clay. And whatever impressions one gets within this clay of our mind when we're young, fingerprints or whatever, they're there for your whole life. You can't change them. They harden as you get older. The mind gets crusty. You can't teach an old dog new tricks, but you can teach a young dog new tricks. You can bend a sapling, but if you try to bend an old tree, it'll break, it'll crack. So it's so important that proper impressions get placed in the mind, sanskaras, impressions get placed in the mind of young children. And then when they're older, they can become strong. Otherwise, it's like limping along with so many debilities and physical problems. We'll never become a great runner if we didn't grow up in a healthy way, because of the body hasn't developed properly. So similarly, it's such a struggle when one hasn't grown up properly and has so many unfortunate sanskaras placed in or put in the consciousness by our culture. So at this point, speaking for myself, all we can do is be humble about it and hope for something better in the future births. But how fortunate it is for one who actually gets this training and can accept it. But it's very difficult to accept this even nowadays, because the whole rest of the world is telling you that you're missing out on what's really valuable and really exciting and really fun. The whole world is going in an opposite, diametrically opposite to this. And who but Prabhupada, practically speaking, is saying, this is you're animals. That's why you're opposite. This is civilized. Has your attempt actually been successful? Are you making people more peaceful, more healthy, more prosperous? Or practically speaking, more disturbed? Manda samanda mateo, manda abhagya upadrutaha. Kali Yuga means disturbed. And that, if you want to characterize everyone nowadays, it's disturbed. So this verse, text 9, says, woman is compared to fire and man is compared to a butter pot. Therefore, a man should avoid associating even with his own daughter in a secluded place. Similarly, he should also avoid associating with other women. One should associate with women only for important business and not otherwise. So this is well known within Prabhupada society, the principle, the analogy of woman is fire and man is like butter. And what happens when butter and fire are together? The butter melts. So therefore, the woman should know they have a particular potency to melt the butter of a man, and they should be kind and compassionate upon the men, and the men should be careful and not take advantage of the women, etc. Because there should be a general acceptance that why are we here? We're here to advance spiritually. So let's assist each other according to our position in this way, by being respectful of everyone's spiritual attempt. One should associate with women only for important business and not otherwise. Not casually. Prabhupada's purport. If a butter pot and fire are kept together, the butter within the pot will certainly melt. The fire won't melt. The fire is already hot. The butter will melt. The analogy is very specific about what does the melting. It's the butter. Woman is compared to fire and man is compared to a butter pot. However advanced one may be in restraining the senses, it is almost impossible for a man to keep himself controlled in the presence of a woman, even if she is his own daughter, mother, or sister. Indeed, his mind is agitated even if one is in the renounced order of life. Therefore, Vedic civilization carefully restricts mingling between men and women. If one cannot understand the basic principle of restraining association between man and woman, He is to be considered an animal. That is the purport of this verse. Text 10. As long as the living entity is not completely self-realized, as long as he is not independent of the misconception of identifying with his body, which is nothing but a reflection of the original body and senses, he cannot be relieved of the conception of duality, which is epitomized by the duality between man and woman. Thus, there is every chance that he will fall down because his intelligence is bewildered. So another admonition for care. And when one is beyond associating with the body, thinking oneself as male or female, then one doesn't have to pay attention to this principle. Like Sukadeva Goswami, when the young ladies, while they were bathing, saw him, they didn't even cover themselves because he was so exalted, and he was beyond the bodily concept of life. So they weren't shy in his presence because he didn't see the bodies, saw souls, nor was he touched by it because he was fully self-realized. But even when his father, Vyasadeva, who was an incarnation of God, walked by, because he was in the house, he was a householder, they immediately became shy and covered themselves. So, Prabhupada's purport. Here is another important warning that a man must save himself from attraction to women. Until one is self-realized, fully independent of the illusory conception of the material body, the duality of man and woman must undoubtedly continue. But when one is actually self-realized, this distinction ceases. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmaniga vihastini shuni chaiva svapakecha pandita samadarshana. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, an outcast. Bhagavad Gita 5.18. On the spiritual platform, the learned person not only gives up the duality of man and woman, but also gives up the duality of man and animal. So when one can look upon a goat, a dog, a woman, a monkey, a bug, and all living entities and see simply the soul, then one can give up this care. But until one is on that platform, that exalted platform, that transcendental platform, one still has to exercise great caution and follow these restrictions. Prabhupada continues, this is the test of self-realization. One must realize perfectly that the living being is spirit soul, but is tasting various types of material bodies. One may theoretically understand this, but when one has practical realization, then he actually becomes a pundit, one who knows. Until that time, the duality continues, and the conception of man and woman also continues. In this stage, one should be extremely careful about mixing with women. No one should think himself perfect and forget the Shastra conjunction that one should be very careful about associating even with his daughter, mother, or sister, not to speak of other women. Srila Madhvacharya cites the following slokas in this regard. So there's two slokas, and the translation of the Sanskrit is unity, or Prabhupada rather says, unity and variety is real knowledge. And therefore giving up variety artificially does not reflect perfect knowledge of monism. According to the Achintya Beta philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are varieties, but all of them constitute one unit. Such knowledge is knowledge of perfect oneness. So now, 11 and 12 discuss householders, especially Brahmin householders. So that was then we'll move forward and then gradually get to the Vanaprastha Ashram. All the rules and regulations apply equally to the householder and the sannyasi, the members of the renounced order of life. The grihastha, however, is given permission by the spiritual master to indulge in sex during the period favorable for procreation. Once, when we were walking in Fiji, I asked Prabhupada was talking about how sannyasis have to be very detached and that they should minimize sleeping and eating. So So I said to Prabhupada, what about householders? And he replied something to the effect of, householders, they can eat and sleep all day. Something like that. They could eat and sleep the whole world. He was being sarcastic. As if householders are not souls and don't have to be advanced, and only sannyasis have to advance. But here in this verse it also speaks of, although it says that householders should also become renounced or act in a renounced way, yet householders are allowed to have children. Prabhupada's purport. It is sometimes misunderstood that a grihastha household is permitted to indulge in sex at any time. This is a wrong conception of grihastha life. In spiritual life, whether one is a grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasa, brahmachari, everyone is under the control of the spiritual master. For brahmacharis and sannyasis, there are strong restrictions on sexual indulgence. Similarly, there are strong restrictions for grihasthas. Grihasthas should indulge in sex life only in accordance with the order of the guru. Therefore, it is mentioned here that one must follow the orders of the spiritual master. Guru vritti vrittir vikalpena. When the spiritual master orders, the grihastha may accept sex life. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:11, dharma virudho bhuteshu kamosmi. Indulgence in sex life without disobedience to the religious rules and regulations constitute a religious principle. The grihastha is allowed to indulge in sex life during the period favorable for procreation in accordance with the spiritual master's order. If the spiritual master orders allow a grihastha to engage in sex life at a particular time, then the grihastha may do so. Otherwise, if the spiritual master orders against it, the grihastha should abstain. The grihastha must obtain permission from the spiritual master to observe the ritualistic ceremony of Gavadan Sanskara. Then he may approach his wife to beget children, otherwise not. A brahmana generally remains a brahmachari throughout his entire life. But although some brahmanas become grihasthas and indulge in sex life, they do so under the complete control of the spiritual master. The kshatriya is allowed to marry more than one wife, but this also must be in accordance with the instruction of the spiritual master. It is not that because one is a grihastha he may marry as many times as he likes and indulge in sex life as he likes. This is not spiritual life. In spiritual life, one must conduct one's whole life under the guidance of the guru. Only one who executes his spiritual life under the direction of the spiritual master can achieve the mercy of Krishna. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada. If one desires to advance in spiritual life, but he acts whimsically, not following the orders of the spiritual master, he has no shelter. Yasya prasada nagatiya katopi. Without the spiritual master's order, even the grihastha should not indulge in sex life. So very, very strong purports in this regard. 12. Brahmacharis or grihasthas who have taken the vow of celibacy, as described above, should not indulge in the following: applying powder or ointment to the eyes, massaging the head with oil, massaging the body with the hands, seeing a woman or painting a woman's picture, eating meat, drinking wine, decorating the body with flower garlands. It doesn't mean prasadam. Smearing scented ointment on the body or decorating the body with ornaments. These they should give up. According to the rules and regulations mentioned above, one who is twice born namely, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, should reside in the Gurukula under the care of the spiritual master. There he should study and learn all the Vedic literatures along with their supplements and the Upanishads according to his ability and power to study. So everyone should attend Gurukula and get trained in this way other than the Sudras. If possible, the student or disciple should reward the spiritual master with the remuneration the spiritual master requests. And then, following the master's order, the disciple should leave and accept one of the other ashrams, namely the grihastha ashram, vanaprastha ashram, or sannyasa ashram, as he desires. everything under guidance, never acting whimsically. So it is not that one must do this, but if one wants to strictly practice spiritual life, one must do this. We always have our freedom. So these are the stringent principles of spiritual life. Everything done under the guidance of Shastra and Guru. We'll read on the second half of Prabhupada's purport, or rather the second two-thirds. At the present time, there are many educational institutions for training in and technology. But such knowledge has nothing to do with understanding the absolute truth. Technology, therefore, is meant for the sudras, whereas the Vedas are meant for the dvijas. Dvija means twice born. Consequently, this verse states, dvijo ditya vibhujicha panishadam. At the present time, in the age of Kali, practically everyone is a sudra, and no one is a dvija. Therefore, the condition of society has very much deteriorated. So although no one, practically speaking, born in Kali Yuga, at least in the Western cultures, thinks following these principles is glorious, yet everyone will agree, practically speaking, that the condition of society has very much deteriorated. And this deterioration has come very much because these principles, which even 50 years ago or 100 years ago weren't outlandish as they seem now, or nowadays, to think of following strictly like this is so difficult, causing so much consternation to the mind. But even 50 years ago, 100 years ago, these standards of society were there. Maybe not exactly in this way, but quite strict. So how much in 50 or 100, how much in 30 years or 10 years even, 10, 20 each, all as time has gone on in Kali Yuga, so much deterioration takes place at a more rapid speed. So rapidly. So how much the condition of society has deteriorated. Another point to be observed, Srila Prabhupada continues from this verse, is that from the brahmachari ashram, one may accept the sannyasa ashram, vanaprastha ashram, or grihastha ashram. It is not compulsory for a brahmachari to become a grihastha. Because the ultimate aim is to understand the absolute truth, there is no necessity of going through all the different ashrams. Thus one may proceed to the sannyasa ashram directly from the brahmachari ashram. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur accepted the sannyasa ashram directly from the brahmachari ashram. In other words, His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not think it compulsory to accept the grihastha ashram or vanaprastha ashram. Continuing. One should realize, this is text 15, that in the fire, in the spiritual master, and in oneself, and in all living entities, in all circumstances and conditions, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, has simultaneously entered and not entered. He is situated externally and internally as the full controller of everything. So here is the goal of this perfect society with its varnas and ashramas that are regulated and non-splayed, so that civilized human's energy can be harnessed, the energy of his human life can be harnessed to progress in spiritual life. And what will he realize? He realized that there is no place in the fire, in the spiritual master, in oneself, in all circumstances, in all living entities, there is the Lord. He is inside of everything, and yet he is outside as well. And he is controlling everything. This is what has to be practically, factually realized. God realized. God realization. This is the purpose. Prabhupada's purport. Realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's omnipresence is the perfect realization of this absolute truth to be obtained through the study of the Vedic literatures. As stated in the Brahma Samhita 5:35, andantarasta paramanujayantarastam. The Lord is situated within the universe, within the hearts of every living entity, and also within the atom. We should understand that whenever the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present, He is present with all His paraphernalia, including His name, form, associates, and servants. The living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus one should understand that since the Supreme Lord has entered the atom, the living entities are also there. One must accept the inconceivable quality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for no one can understand from the material point of view how the Lord is all pervasive and yet is situated in His own abode, Goloka Vrindavan. Achintya, inconceivable, achintya veda veda. The Lord is everything, everywhere, yet He is situated within His own abode. This realization is possible if one strictly follows the regulative principles of ashram, brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Text 16, more on the purpose of all the ashrams. By practicing in this way, whether one be in the brahmacharya ashram, grihastha ashram, vanaprastha ashram, or sannyas ashram, one must always realize the all-pervading presence of the Supreme Lord. For this is the way it is possible to understand the absolute truth. One's energy is focused in this way. Prabhupada's short purport. This is the beginning of self-realization. One must first understand how Brahman is present everywhere and how He is acting. This education is called Brahma Jigyasa and is the real concern of human life. Atato Brahma Jigyasa from the Vedanta Sutra. Now is the time in human life. Having taken a human birth, it is to use one's life and birth to progress spiritually, understand the absolute truth. That is the real concern of human life. Without such knowledge, one cannot claim to be a human being. Rather, he remains in the animal kingdom. As it is said, Saiva Gokara, without such knowledge, one is no better than a cow or an ass. So this explained, these first 16 verses in this chapter explain the purpose of the ashramas as well as the specifically the brahmacharya ashram's duties of one in the brahmacharya ashram. And now in the remainder of the chapter, vanaprastha will be discussed. O King, Narada Muni says to Yudhisthira Maharaj, I shall now describe the qualifications for vanaprastha, one who is retired from family life. By rigidly following the rules and regulations for the vanaprastha, one can easily be elevated to the upper planetary system known as Mahaloka, so a very, very exalted planetary system where there's such incredible peace and happiness that one can't, practically speaking, imagine it from the point of view of our gross consciousness. So it takes austerity, though, to do this. And vanaprastha, as brahmachari life is meant for studentship, study, and austerity, and study and celibacy, vanaprastha life is meant, also there's celibacy in there, but it is meant for austerity specifically. Brahmachari studying and service, developing a mood, sense control, mind control, and a mood of submission and service, and vanaprastha meant for austerity. A person in vanaprastha life should not eat grains grown by tilling of the fields. He should also not eat grains that have grown without tilling of the field but are not fully ripe. Nor should a vanaprastha eat grains cooked in fire. Indeed, he should eat only fruit ripened by the sunshine. A vanaprastha should prepare cakes to be offered in sacrifice from fruits and grains grown naturally in the forest. When he obtains some new grains, he should give up his old stock of grains. He should depend upon Krishna, not stock in that way. So we can see, understanding the Vedic culture, something of the Vedic culture, how strict it is, and how unqualified we are to practice things, how merciful Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is by giving us the chanting of the holy names, the Hare Krishna mantra, as the methodology, the prime practice of, for spiritual realization, the Yuga Dharma in this age. A vanaprastha should prepare a thatched cottage or take shelter of a cave in a mountain only to keep the sacred fire. But he should personally practice enduring snowfall, wind, fire, rain, and the shining of the sun. The vanaprastha should wear matted locks of hair. Now there's something. Again, at least we could do some of it. On his head, and let his body hair, nails, and mustache grow. He should not cleanse his body of dirt. There's another one that a lot of people will feel very happy with. Yes, I'm practicing vanaprastha life. I'm not bathing anymore. He should keep a water pot. Yes, I will keep a water pot. Deer skin and a rod where the bark of a tree is covering. And use garments colored like fire. Yellowish, reddish garments he should wear. Being very thoughtful, a vanaprastha should remain in the forest for 12 years, 8 years, 4 years, 2 years, or at least 1 year, practicing austerity. He should behave in such a way that he will not be disturbed or troubled by too much austerity. In other words, one mind has to be so detached. That's the purpose. Detachment of mind. Detachment from what? Listening to the senses. And these things occur by practice. When, because of disease or old age, one is unable to perform his prescribed duties for advancement in spiritual consciousness or study of the Vedas, he should practice fasting, not taking any food. He should properly place the fire elements in his own self and in this way give up his bodily affinity, by which one thinks the body to be oneself or one's own. One should gradually merge the material body into the 5 elements, earth, water, fire, air, and sky. So one, we see this in Dhritarashtra in the first canto. We see this in Prithu Maharaj in different places where great personalities practice yoga at the end of their life, and they basically dissolve their sense of self, their false sense of self, by merging. And this is what's going to be described in the remaining verses in this chapter, by merging all the elements which we commonly think about ourselves but have nothing to do with us, including the false ego, by merging these back into their source and then leaving through, and then remaining only in the actual self as a soul. So this is really through the practice of yoga. 25. So I'll just read these verses. It's very short, a few short purports, but we'll read the verses till the end. Explains the vanaprastha process of leaving the body, practically speaking, after one is detached. A sober, self-realized person who has full knowledge should merge the various parts of their body in their original sources. The holes in the body are caused by the sky. The process of breathing is caused by air. The heat of the body is caused by fire and semen. Blood and mucus are caused by water. The hard substances like skin, muscle, and bone are caused by earth. In this way, all the constituents of the body are caused by the various elements, and they should be merged again into those elements. Through yoga, this is done. Thereafter, the object of speech, along with the sense of speech of the tongue, should be bestowed upon fire. Craftsmanship and the two hands should be given to the demigod Indra. The power of movement and the legs should be given to Lord Vishnu. Sensual pleasure, along with the genitals, should be bestowed upon Prajapati. The rectum with the power of evacuation should be bestowed in its proper place to Mrityu. The oral instruments along with sound vibration should be given to the deities presiding over the directions. The instrument of touch along with the sense objects of touch should be given to Vayu. Form with the power of sight should be bestowed upon the sun. So everything's being offered to its source. So in Krishna consciousness, what we basically do, because we can't practice these very austere self-control forms of yoga, is we offer everything not to the intermediary source, but to their ultimate source. So everything is offered to Krishna. Sarvakarana Karanam. The tongue, along with the demigod Varuna, shall be bestowed upon water, and the power of smell, along with the two Aswini Kumar demigods, should be bestowed upon the earth. The mind, along with all material desires, should be merged in the moon demigod. All these are the predominating deities over these different functions of the body, they're situated in the universal form, and we've studied this in the third canto. All the subject matters of intelligence, along with intelligence itself, should be placed in Lord Brahma. False ego, which is under the influence of the material modes of nature and which induces one to think, I am this body and everything connected with this body is mine, should be merged along with material activities in Rudra, the predominating deity of false ego. Material consciousness along with the goal of thought should be merged in the individual living being, and the demigods acting under the modes of nature should be merged along with the perverted living being into the supreme being. So everything is gradually merging back into the supreme being. The earth should be merged in water, water in the brightness of the sun, this brightness into the air into the sky into the false ego into the total material energy, the total material energy into the unmanifest ingredients, the pradhan feature of the material energy, and at last, the ingredient feature of material manifestation into the supersoul. When all the material designations have thus merged into their respective material elements, the living beings, who are all ultimately completely spiritual, being one in quality with the supreme being, should cease from material existence. The purpose of this is to separate, again, use one's life, the remaining part of one's life, to separate oneself from all the false identifications with the self. And remain as we actually are, as eternal, whose symptom is consciousness, who has a relationship with Krishna. So this is the yogic process of doing this through the Varnashrama system and meant for the Vanaprasthas. So everyone, they should cease from material existence as flames cease when the wood in which they are burning is consumed. When the material body is returned to its various material elements, only the spiritual being remains. This spiritual being is Brahman and is equal in quality with Parabrahman. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Perfect Society for Spiritual Classes. So, Krishna allows us, tomorrow we shall begin chapter 13, which will describe the behavior of a perfect person, an avaduta, someone who has achieved the position of complete non-identification with the body. So that will be discussed in the next chapter. We should be able to begin that, Krishna willing, tomorrow. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai.